Good morning.
Good morning.
So when I thought about what I might talk to you about this morning, the first thing that came to mind was nuclear proliferation and world peace. No, it wasn't. I thought I'd choose something a little simpler, kindness, but something that we kind of think we all know about, and yet it doesn't hurt to maybe put it under the light and examine it once in a while. So just to get straight, I'm not talking about kindness or being nice. I mean, nice is good, and we could use a little more of nice. But in fact, it's one of the first lessons we teach our children, right? We tell them to play nice or be nice. And when they don't, we say, that's not nice. Nice is good. It's about keeping a social order. The difference is that being nice is quite often, it's about a set of behavior that will make people think well of us. It's about us. So let me read you something from Philippians. I love Philippians. It's full of good advice. See, Vernetta agrees. So it's, I must be right. Thank you. It reads, so if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. In other words, it's about the other guy. So I'm just going to play Daniel Webster here and say that kindness is love in action. I had some good examples growing up, one in particular of kindness. A lady named Marie. She was my mother's best friend. She was love on legs. She was. And I miss her. But it didn't matter who you were, whether you could have been Queen Elizabeth, or you could have been a grubby 5-year-old coming out of Sunday school. Whoever you were, when you left her, you knew you were loved. You knew it. It was just a wonderful feeling, and I miss her still. Now, on the other hand, sometimes my best teachers in life have been the people who have taught me what not to do, right? Anybody else found that out? Well, this happened a few years ago. It made me think of this when I was preparing for today. I ran into the mother of one of my high school buddies. I hadn't seen her in like 40 years. And so we stopped to visit, and she told me how Becky was doing and Becky's children and Becky's grandchildren. And then she told me about her and her husband's, you know, aches and pains, and about Becky's siblings. And then, okay, so you get the idea. So 20 minutes later, she says, "Well, it was nice to see you. I gotta run." And I said, "Take care." But what I really wanted to say was, we're all fine too. We're, you know. So I kind of made a vow right then and there that from now on, as often as I could remember to, I would make each conversation I had more about the other person. You never know when a simple how are you, a true, sincere how are you, can make a tremendous difference. There's a lot of advice out there on the subject of kindness. My favorite is from Wayne Dyer, and I don't know what if it originates with him, but I've heard him say it so many times. He says, when you find yourself at that point where you have to choose between being right and being kind. Choose being kind. Now, how many marriages would be improved if that hung on the wall of every room? But we experience that all the time, I think. Now, to practice kindness, you kind of have to develop what I'm going to call heart eyes. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Lewis and I love to take drives in the country. And I have this penchant for red-tailed hawks. So he taught me what his dad taught him, how to have hunter's eyes, which means that you don't, you know, look at every tree branch or blade of grass. You kind of let your eyes scan the whole landscape, and that shape that you're looking for will emerge, okay? Well, if we use heart eyes, then we will, you know, engage everyone we're with. But the space where that act of kindness could be filled will emerge and make itself known to you. Now, I'm not saying we need to hover. You know, that's not fun either. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, my mom told me this story. My mother is 95 years old and still in pretty darn good health. So she went out to the end of her driveway one morning to, you know, bring her trash can back into the house after the trash man had been there. And they had somehow, you know, dumped it over. So it was laying there. So here she is trying to keep herself stable, and she's got her cane, but she's trying to get this rather cumbersome trash can righted again. And she said this, she tried two or three times, and this young man in a truck stopped outside her house, and he got out of the truck, but he stayed on the other side of the truck, and he said, "Ma'am, could you use some help?" And she said, "Yes, I could." So he righted the trash can out, and she said, independent soul that she is, said, "I can get it now." And he said, "Okay." But he watched the whole time without being intrusive or threatening in any way. He watched until she was back in the house safe and sound. He made not only the act, but how he did it about her comfort level. It's true kindness. Now, sometimes we withhold acts of kindness, maybe because we're a little self-conscious once in a while. We worry that our offer of help won't be received. And, you know, if it's not received, that's okay. It's not about you. It's about them. Let them decide. It's all right. But I find that the easiest way, simplest way to get over any kind of self-consciousness is to take your consciousness off self and put it on the other person, just like that young man did. Know this, though. Whenever that urge, that God wink, comes on you to offer kindness, whatever it is, large or small, doesn't matter, know that that is spirit moving through you to the other person. That is God expressing through you. Now, kindness is kind of like, it's like love or prosperity, those other wonderful energies. We need to let it flow. And sometimes, how many of you are guilty of blocking that flow by saying, "Oh, no, that's okay, I'll manage. I've done that." You know, we want to be independent. We don't want to, you know, impose on other people. But know this, that when you accept an offer of kindness, you're keeping that love, that kindness, that good energy flowing. So let it flow. My mother-in-law's always telling me, learn to receive. Okay. And, you know, and on that topic, here's another aspect of kindness. There is also self-kindness. You know, what do they tell us when we get on an airplane and they're doing all the exits and the rah-rah? They tell you to put your oxygen mask on yourself first so that you can help the person you're flying with if in case of an emergency. Same thing. We need to learn to love ourselves first in order to better love others. We need to practice self-kindness in order to truly and sincerely and authentically extend kindness to others. Now, here's one of the tough parts. The tough part about kindness is, what do you do in the face of someone who has not been particularly kind to you? Easy to be kind and nice to the sweetest person in the room. But what do we do when that's not what we're up against? There's different ways to look at it. In Matthew, there's a couple of hints on how to handle that. One is the old cast not your pearls before swine thing. Now, I always thought that sounded a little harsh. But then the message is, if you extend kindness to someone who has not been kind to you, and it's not received, know that it's not a rejection of you. It is an indication of where they are, and you can let them be there. It's okay. I mean, you can try and try again if you wish, but if in the end it's rejected, then I think maybe you need to practice self-kindness and maybe take yourself out of that situation. Nurture yourself. Then there's another thought, the turn the other cheek admonition. You know, if someone smites you on your right cheek, turn their left cheek to them, however it goes. Now, did Jesus intend for us to subject ourselves to abuse of any kind, whether it's verbal, emotional, physical, anything? No. Of course not. But remember, at the time, he was talking to people who lived by an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And there are still some scholars who debate what that really meant. Maybe it meant no more than an eye for an eye. But when Jesus told us to turn the other cheek, I think the point of what he was getting at was, don't retaliate. There's no need to retaliate. When we retaliate unkindness with unkindness, we keep that flow moving. And the goal of our life should be to stop that kind of flow and change the direction. Keep this in mind. Whenever you encounter someone who tends to wound, intentionally or unintentionally, I firmly believe that they're doing so out of their own woundedness. And it in no way excuses it, but it may give you something to think about when you decide where you want to go. I know this, I'm certain of this, that in that moment when we have to make a decision about how we conduct ourselves or how we will express God, let this be your guide. Let that Christ light be your guide, and let the decision you make on how to move forward not be about that person across from you. Let it be about who you are and who you want to be. I want to leave you with just one more thing. This was written by Wayne Muller, who I don't know if you're familiar with him and his work or not, but he is a theologian, he's a therapist, and an author. Wonderful books. He wrote this. He said, our work, should we heed this call, is to hold one another close, to listen together for the ancient, eternal wellspring of tender, honest kindness. To listen for where such grace lives in us that refuses to be extinguished but to know still that it could die. And finally, to know, to remember together, when two or more are gathered, that our deepest call is always to resurrect one another again. So let's take that thought into some quiet time. Settle yourself comfortably. And close your eyes if you're comfortable doing that. And just focus on your breath. Breathe in and exhale whatever cares may be facing you, whatever concerns or worries. Breathe in the breath of God and let it move through you. Feel all the muscles in your body relax. Feel the top of your head relax, your face, your neck, and your shoulders move more deeply. Feel your arms, your hands relax with each breath. Your legs, your feet sink further into relaxation. If there is any part of your body that is uncomfortable or needs attention, direct that breath of God to that place. Feel God's healing energy moving there to comfort you. And as you continue to relax, imagine your heart expanding and opening wider and wider, making room for all those you love, making room for all those you have yet to meet. Feel it fill with God's love, God's guidance, God's peace. And now imagine a silver thread running from that wide open heart to your eyes, so that when we come back and you look at the world, you can look through those eyes with a heart filled with love, ready always to heed the call for kindness. So, rest now in the silence. So now as we start to come back to the room, notice once again your breath Breathe in God's energy and feel your feet and your legs come awake. Feel your hands and your arms come alive, renewed from your time within. You can once again feel the seat on which you rest. You can feel the air in the room move across your face and awaken you. Feeling that love from God, you become aware, back into the sanctuary, more aware of the people around you. Deep breath. And now, as we come back to the surface, let us unite in the prayer that Jesus taught us to pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.